There's a familiar story in the Gospel of Matthew as well as in Mark, and it is the story of Jesus walking on water. And you're familiar with that story, I'm sure. And we could talk a lot of different ways about this, but we're gonna pull a certain part of that story out as kind of a focus of what we're talking about here. But just kind of review what's happening. The disciples have just witnessed Jesus feeding the multitudes of people with a few fish and a few loaves of bread. And that scenario is done. The crowds are gone, and Jesus has instructed his people to go on ahead. And so in chapter 14 and verse 22, it says, immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, or actually Mark says before dawn, so it's still probably pretty dark, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. And I wonder what they cried out. You know, what would have they said? Well, they cried out. They're out here in the middle of the boat, middle of the sea. Wind is blowing. They can't get anywhere. They're rowing. The wind's against them. They're not making any progress. And they see this figure coming at them. And they cried out. And there's some more crying that happens a little bit later, in the story. Immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." I want to ask Peter about that, you know. That's an interesting question. And Jesus says, "Come." And I wonder if I was Peter, wait a minute, did I really ask that? You know, did I really ask out on this water? And he does. So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened and began to sink. He cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." So Peter cries out and the disciples cry out, and I wonder what they would have been saying, what their words would have been. The original Greek, therefore, those two sayings there that said they cried out and Peter cried out, the Greek word is krazo or krazo, and it means to cry out, but it also means to scream. And when I read it that way, that kind of takes a little bit different. It paints a little bit different picture, because here are these macho guys out on a lake. Many of them are fishermen, and they're in the middle of this that's going on, and they see this figure coming to them, and they scream. Now, that paints a little different picture. Now, Matthew was with them, and he's being honest. You know, he's retelling the story, and, you know, they were scared. And they probably screamed out like, you know, little schoolgirls probably, because that probably freaked them out. But they cried out. They cried out. And similarly, that same word is used when Peter got in the water and became frightened and lost his faith, and he cried out as well. He screamed. What did they say? What would have their cries been? Well, that's what happens when we're fearful. We scream. In our most frightening times, we cry out. We are helplessly full of despair. We can't get ourselves out of this. That's the predicament that they were in. That's the predicament Peter was in. That's the predicament we get in as well. And sometimes that crying out, that crazo, takes on the form, "Lord, why are you doing this to me?" That happens an awful lot of times. In the deepest part of our despairs, cry out that we have, "Why are you doing this to me?" And we sometimes then put our circumstances at the fault of God. It's his fault. "Why are you doing this to me?" It's then that we feel most alone or abandoned. But it's interesting that is so often the times that we find out how desperately we are in need of him. That's when we acknowledge our need for God. "Why are you doing this to me?" Well, at least that says, "I believe you're there." You know, there's a saying that says there are no such thing as atheists in foxholes. In the midst of war and all these things going on, there's not too many atheists there. They're all in some form crying out to God, "Lord, help me. Lord, save me. Why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this to me?" Well, the author and the producers of the book and the movie that we're talking about, The Shack, have kind of taken an interesting spin on this story that we just read out of Matthew and out of Mark, and they've incorporated it neatly into this movie. And once again, and I apologize, I've kind of summarized the movie every week, but in case you haven't read the book or you haven't been here, the movie Shack that is currently out is based on a book that's 10 or 15 years old now. And the premise of the book is Mac, the main character, has gone through a very difficult childhood, had a lousy parent with some abuse, and later on in life he has lost his very young daughter. She was caught, kidnapped, taken, and killed, and he has kept these things inside of him. And so the crux of this book is about Mac having these kinds of questions, these deep, deep questions. And he has the opportunity then to meet God face to face, to help see him through these terrible things that he's having to go through. And the encounter takes place in a shack in a woods, and that's where this story comes from. So the last few weeks we've been talking about some of these key questions that Mac is having to walk through as he is discerning what is right, who God is, and what he is to do with the pain that he has. So the scene we're going to show you here is Mac has just had an encounter with Jesus, the Son, and Jesus similarly has told him, there's something I want to show you. And Jesus tells Mac, but I need to do something first, sort of like what Jesus told his disciples. I want you to get in the boat and go on ahead of me, and I'll meet you on the other side, and then I'll show you what I want to show you. And that's where this scene takes place. So, Raleigh, if you'll show that.
Mac, it's okay.
Why are you doing this to me?
This isn't me.
You told me to come out here.
Mac, this is happening inside you. You're letting it consume you, and you don't have to. Just take a deep breath and listen to my voice.
So, what's happening there? That's a very... They didn't give me very long segments when we purchased these. They're pretty short. But what's happening? Mac is out in the middle of this lake waiting on Jesus to come, and the boat starts to break apart. And you begin to see... You kind of begin to see his world figuratively kind of crumble around him. And what's happening there, the symbolism of what's going on, is Mac has just become so absorbed by his pain. It's culminated in this extreme doubt and anxiety he has. Throughout this whole movie, you can just see his character that he's just bound by his past and what has happened. And he sees this surrounding water. If you notice, it wasn't just clear lake water. It was gross. It was dark and death-filled, and it just very unclean. It was coming into the boat, and that was symbolic of his circumstances taking over his life. What has happened to him in the past and the terrible, painful things that have happened are beginning to crumble around him, and it's this pollution, and it's very powerful, and it's very painful, and he kept putting this away, all of this stuff away, until it eventually pops and says, "Why are you doing this to me?" Have you ever asked that question to God? Why are you doing this to me? Those words come quickly, especially for Mac. It kind of is his default response. He does this over and over again. We begin to feel for him because we do understand his hurt and anger. And likewise, us. We find ourselves in different situations where we are faced with hardships and lives that can be led to similar situations as Mac. I mean, that's a terrible thing to lose a child, but there's all kinds of other things that can cause equal despair and pain. Why are you doing this to me? Maybe that's our default as well. Don't know. As we continue to watch the scene, what we find out is the more that Mac focuses on the rising water, the more powerful it becomes, and the more desperate he feels, and the deeper he sinks. And I like that creative notion that the movie people put together here, because his way of dealing with his problems up to this point was just not to deal with them at all. He's put them away. We're not supposed to have problems, you know. And Mac was a macho man kind of guy. We're just not supposed to have problems, so he tucked them away. We're supposed to be in control, especially followers of Christ. We're supposed to have these things all in order. We're not supposed to have these difficult questions that Mac has here. Students in school, that's tough. Growing up can be difficult, but we're supposed to have it all together. And that's what Mac had been trying to do all his life until it got him. It surfaced, it bubbled, and he had to deal with that. You can't just continue stuffing this stuff down and hope it just disappears. Those problems will have a way of finding their way to the surface and forcing their way out. Those problems are like that water. And I like that that's what the authors did of this. They showed that this is busting forth. And the more Mac focused on it, the more he looked at his problems and his situation and his circumstances, the more he sunk into the water. And so there are different perspectives between Mac and Jesus at the time. You hear Jesus speaking in the scene. You don't get to see him till just a little bit later on. Mac wants to blame Jesus. First thing he says is, "Why are you doing this to me? You told me to come out here on this water." Very similar to that passage we read in Matthew. They're out in the middle of the boat. The storms are coming, and they would have been thinking that same thing. "You told us to come out here, and you were going to meet us on the other side. You told us to come out here." Mac's saying the same thing. "You told me to do this." He's putting the blame on. Jesus' perspective is different. He says, "Mac," the first thing he says is that this, what he's looking at, the gurgling, oily, ugly, death water, "This isn't me. This isn't me. Mac, this is happening inside of you," Jesus tells Mac. "You're letting it consume you, and you don't have to." And isn't that like us so many times when we find ourselves caught in pain and suffering? We get so focused on them, we want to avoid them, and we start pointing out, or we blame God, or we do what it is to sidestep the real issue here of trusting Him and allowing Him to have healing. And it's a fair response. No one wants to go through that kind of pain, those kinds of difficult things. And you know, this isn't too far from home here. And I've been around here long enough to know that many of you are facing or have faced, you know, some really tough things in your past, very, very difficult things. Some of you are facing very tough circumstances in relationships and in health and those kinds of things. It's here. You have those kinds of things. And we too are going to raise those questions. And I I'm not the sharpest tack in the box, but I'm smart enough to know that if you haven't had those situations in your past or you're not struggling through difficult times now, I'm smart enough to know our time's coming. It's going to happen. We're going to have difficulties as well. And so what is our response going to be? Is it to hide those problems? Is it to blame God? You know, that's for sure understandable because we don't want to do that. Who wants to go through pain? We just want to get away from it. But our authors have written here, it's simply an unwritten law of humanity that the only way out of grief is through it. I thought that was put well. The only way out of grief is through it. It hurts, but with that hurt will come healing. So how do we get there when they're in the midst of the boat breaking apart, terrible health situations, a relationship that is just busted, very difficult? How do we move from the hurt to the healing? How do we move away more from that attitude that says, "Why are you doing this to me?" Well, I love Jesus to Mac as he's in the boat. One of the first things he says is, "Look at me." Jesus to Mac in this clip, as the movie continues, he also says some other things similar to that. He says, "Just take a deep breath and listen to my voice. Just keep your eyes on me." The theme of the movie, the musical song that's by Faith Hill and Tim McGraw, is just that. Keep your eyes on me. That's what Jesus tells Mac in the midst of this. Focus on me. I'm not going anywhere. But Mac's antidote there that Jesus gave him is ours as well. It's about our focus. It's about keeping your eyes where they need to be. I found a driver's instruction manual. I think it's for Europe, but they drive on the wrong side of the road over there, so disregard that. But here's what it says in their driver's manual for young people that are learning to get their licenses. In regards to your eyes, it's important to understand that your eyes determine the path your vehicle follows. You steer where you look. To illustrate this, pick a straight stretch of pavement, highway, and light traffic, that's good. While driving, look at the center line about 12 seconds ahead. Keep looking at the center line 12 seconds ahead. Observe how the car moves toward the center line. Have you heard that before? As you're driving down the road, if you stare at something, your vehicle will begin to glide that way. Similarly, they say, look at the line on the right side of the road. Stare at that line 12 seconds in the head. Before you know it, your car begins to drift over there as well. That's an illustration talking about our lives will start moving on what we are focused on. Focus on those problems, that's where you'll stay. Focus on Him, and that'll change your course as well. You know, before the days of GPS-enabled farm equipment, you know, that's cheating. But I'd like to drive, and when I drive down the road, I like to see how farmers are laying out their fields. And you can tell the ones that are looking at things differently when they're planting seed. You know, the ones that have the straightest rows, as they sat on their tractor with their GPS off, that doesn't count. How do I keep a straight row? Well, you can look behind you at your past and see where you've been. That doesn't work. You can kind of look where you're at and see where you are. That doesn't work either. The straightest lines are when your eyes are where? Forward. That's how you get the straightest lines. Where your eyes are determines the path that you're going to be on. Keep your eyes. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Keep your eyes on me, he told Mac. Those words aren't just for a movie. They're not just for the disciples that are for us as well. Listen to these promises that we have given to us. New Testament promises. The first one from Matthew. And be sure of this. Your eyes can be on this truth. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. In John chapter 16, verse 33, I have told you these things so that in me you have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. There's where my eyes need to be. In me you will have peace. A couple chapters earlier in John, peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. All of that gunk in the boat that's around you, all the storm that those disciples would have seen, I am with you. In Hebrews chapter 12, let us run God's race, stripping off any weight that holds us back by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Those are things that we can focus on. That is telling us to keep our focus in life, our ears attuned to Christ. Psalm 46, God is our refuge and strength and everlasting present and help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. God is our refuge and strength. That's where our eyes need to be. Those are powerful promises. Those are words that can sustain us. God is calling us to these scriptures just as plainly as they would have been calling Mac as he was in this movie. And they do convey that same message. Just take a deep breath and listen for my voice. Those disciples, there was a storm in their lives, and it was outside of them. Clearly it was outside. The wind was pounding their boat and battering their boat. Mac's storm was on the inside. It was the past turmoils and all the difficult pains that he had to go through. But they both were legitimate storms. They were causing damage in the disciples' lives as well as in Mac's life. And we have those storms as well. The storms that we could be facing could be external ones. That's stuff that people are doing to us. Situations outside that is affecting us. Those are external storms that can take their toll. Similarly, we can have internal storms as well, similar to Max. Things that we have in our past that are just so painful. But regardless, they are the same kind of storms with the same kind of potential damage that Mac would have been going through. And it's partially about this keeping our focus. Still look at him. Keep your eyes on him. He is our source of peace and help, safety and healing. It was true then, and it's true for us as well. And when Mac does just that, when he looks at Jesus, says, look at me, and he fixes his eyes to see him in the movie, the scene here, but if you saw the movie, you saw this happen, his problems subside. And eventually Mac experienced what something similar to Peter got to experience, because what Jesus says to him after that storm is over, he says, now let's get you out of that boat. And the movie does such a neat job of this. He's sitting in the boat there. He says, take off your shoes and walk with me. And Mac gets to do something similar to what Peter does as well in the movie. And it's even more than that. He takes off and they run. They run across that water. And it's really a neat scene, because Jesus has taken Mac from this focus of despair, this self-centeredness, to healing, and much more than this, this ability to run across the lake and see what is next. Beyond that current situation, there's more. And when Christ is at the center, there's growth. When the storm is difficult, if it's a relational thing, if it's an internal thing, we know that through that, there is more. There's growth. There's something next. There's something yet to follow. Jesus told Mac on the other shore, I want to show you something. There was something yet to follow. There's always something to follow, and that's what took place. Something else is going to happen. And I think in our experiences, we find that, you know, when the difficulty is relational, it's tough when we're in the middle of that. But at the end of that, and when Christ is at the center, there is oftentimes restoration. And then even more than that, the more that is to come, you'll find that you have new skills. If it's a relational thing, you have a new set of skills that will help you in the next relational problem. That's how Christ can take us through. All of us could probably remember times when we had financial struggles. For sure, that's an easy time to say, why are you doing this to me? But after that storm, and after we have taken advantage of staying focused on Him, we have a deeper appreciation for what we have. That is the newness. That is the lesson. That is the more through the situation. And even the biggie that we are all facing is death. You know, it's coming. It's so easy for me to sit here and, you know, I'm not the young guy that, this thing's starting to get old. It's starting to wear out, and I know what's coming. The big one that's coming for all of us is death. And if you stop and ponder that, why are you doing this to me? Right? We're in denial. We don't want to admit it. But it's coming. That death is coming. There's always something. And as followers of Christ, there is more. There's a storm of death coming. But we know that something there is next. And when my eyes are focused on Him, what about death? There's this beautiful next step that is coming. That's what we have to look forward to. So we can turn our focus, you know, away from this attitude, why are you doing this to me, and turn it back to listening to His voice that says, look at me. And we can be strengthened through that storm and find more about God even through that storm. He has more in store, and we need to learn to trust. He's always calling us to Himself. Relationship with Him is the heart of how we are meant to live this life. And that's probably one of the things we tend to forget so often. One of the first shock lessons we talked about was we so often try to do this on our own. We try to have this conversation with ourselves to get through life. And it's never been about that. It's always supposed to be in communion, in communication with our Father. He wants to show us the reality that we can experience together with Him. But you know, sometimes we want to cling to the boat. Sometimes we just want to stay there. It does keep us afloat and getting by, and it's maybe the only means of surviving, just to hang on to that boat. And sometimes our battered boat in the storm gives us meaning in life and even a crutch by which we never want to leave. I know people that are that way. People are in the midst of a storm, and they're happy there. They just as soon sit in their misery as opposed to focusing on what is more important and move on and become and go to that next level. I see some nodding heads. I think you probably know some people that way. It's easy to stay in this lousy circumstance, this relationship that's no good, instead of focusing on Christ and seeing where that repair could take place. Whatever struggle that's there, we find people often wanting to do that. Living in relationship with God as He moves us from where we are to where we have always been intended to be. That's what this conversation, this communion is supposed to be about. Moving us from where we are to who we are supposed to be. So are there storms now in your lives? I know that there are with some of us. There are some tremendously powerful things going on. Keep your eyes on Him. Trust Him. Have faith in what He is doing. He is in control of the circumstances that are going on. Stay in tune. Keep your eyes on the part of the road that you're supposed to keep your eyes on, and that's Him. Perhaps you don't have any big storms right now, but again, I will promise you they're probably going to come. They will be here. So what do you do in the meantime? Well, I thought of an illustration here regarding golf. It seems like I do that an awful lot, but I like to watch beginning golfers, especially kids. Kids that see golf on TV, they see their dads or moms playing golf. And I always get a tickle out of this. I should have brought a club. But a lot of times you'll see a kid, they'll be out in the middle of the yard and the golf ball's down here and they got their club in their hand and they swing like this. They're here and they're looking around and then about right here they look down. You know, they look around like this and then they're here and they miss the ball completely. You know, because what they're doing is they're looking at the ball when they think they need to look at the ball at impact. You know, and you know, you watched enough golfers, you know, those guys sit there and they do their waggles and all that kind of stuff, and they're staring. They just stare at that thing for a long time. Their eyes are fixed on that ball. You know, but a little kid waits till impact, and then they hit the ball. Well, there's a lesson there, I think. If the impact is that storm, if it's that thing that is coming, if we wait to focus, then pretty difficult to get through the shot. It's important that as we are going through life, if we don't have problems now, it's important that we still do keep our eyes where they need to be. We need to keep our ears tuned to where they need to be. The golfer needs to focus on where that ball is. My head still, my eyes on that. So as my club head moves through there, I'm making good contact. We need to keep our eyes where they need to be before the impact, before the storm comes. So why not be where we are in the regularness of life, keep our eyes on Him? How do we do that? Well, by submitting, by confessing, by reading His Word, by worshiping, by fellowship, by serving. That's how we keep our eyes on Him. In these times where you may not have turmoil, we do that now so that when the storm comes, we can hear His voice and we can recognize Him when He says, Joel, come, get out of the boat. Let me show you what this is all about. Keep your eyes on Him. Let's pray. Father, we thank You for the message that we are learning through a movie and a book and a movie, but it's not about that so much that it is about what that movie and book points to, and it points to You. Too often times, Lord, we do know that our eyes, in a world that's so tangled with other stuff, it's easy to lose our focus. It's easy to listen to things that aren't You. But we're here today to be reminded that we need to be recentered. We need to focus our eyes. We need to be in Your Word. We need to be in prayer. We need to confess. We need to listen to Your voice and stay centered in You. We can only do that by the empowering Spirit that You give us, and we thank You for that. Amen.